Welcome to Spanish Janice. I'm Janice Burt, and today we're diving into conversations that inspire growth, connection, and confidence. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to Spanish Janice, everybody. This is the bilingual show where we talk about business, leadership, and wellness, one of my favorite things to talk about. And I really want to keep it real with not just the wins, but also the wipeouts, the things that are a little messy. I am your host, Janice Burt, and today I am joined by one of the partners from My Profit Gurus. Harsh, it is so nice to have you here today. I really want to talk about everything that you guys do and get into the nitty-gritty, but before that, I want to know your origin story. Like, who was Little Harsh? Where did you start from? Because now you're an amazing businessman, business owner, but who were you when you were a little guy?
Well, thanks a lot, Janice. First of all, thanks for having us or having me here today. I really was looking forward to being part of your show. And it's funny, you know, because I'm not really even a numbers guy. You know, but over time, I realized that picking up on what was some of the problems with looking at numbers, it doesn't really tell you the full story. So I remember like sitting early in my career, like when I was working with the IRS, Big Four, internal audit, I was looking at financials and technically everything looked right. Tied out, everything, the books looked pretty clean, but something just didn't feel right. I'd see companies growing, but cash was tight, or decisions being made where, you know, they weren't really using any real metrics. It just kind of felt right. And the hard lessons for me was realizing just because the numbers are correct doesn't mean the business is okay. That's what shifted how I really started thinking about everything. And for us at My Profit Gurus, that was our origin story. That we started to get very involved with small business. We started finding out that they lack the systems that big businesses really need and have. And they also, they're like experts in their craft, but they lacked maybe some level of financial expertise or marketing expertise. So we were able to package a lot of that together to offer that as a service. So that's sort of our origin there for the most part.
So you were not a numbers guy when you were, let's say, middle school, high school, and all that. How did you feel about numbers and math? I'm just curious, because I was very much English and speech and things like that, but the math equation and numbers was not my thing. What was it like for you?
You know, what's funny is that, you know, I don't think ever when I was growing up, I ever thought about being a CPA. I don't think that was ever one of my career choices. You know, I thought about being an astronaut or even a garbage collector, you know, you name it. I wanted to be anything but an accountant. And I don't know if it was necessarily, you know, just the lack of, you know, being really strong at math. I think I'm okay at math, but I think what really drew me into the field was really solving problems, the logic side of it. I think that's where I see the math connection. And I feel like, you know, as you're working with business owners specifically, they are running into a gauntlet of different types of issues. So being able to, like, you know, think logically and help them prioritize on what's really the most important, I think that sort of drew me to sort of a math and maybe, like you mentioned, like maybe a kind of a artistic combination to some degree, because you're always trying to think of ways outside the box to solve a problem.
Ah, so you are a fixer and a problem solver. I love it. And I know that you've worked in these high performing environments. What is like one of the biggest myths that business owners believe when they think about being profitable? What's a myth out there?
That's a great question. And I think a lot of owners assume if their sales are up, they must be profitable. And on paper, it can look that way. But I've sat with business owners, you know, doing 1 million, 3 million, 10 million in revenue, and they'll say, I don't understand. I should be doing better than this. And what's really going on is they're growing, but they're not paying attention to how that growth is being structured. Margins are getting thinner, you know, costs start to creep up, cash gets tied up in the business. So even though revenue looks strong, it doesn't actually translate to a sense of stability. And that part surprises people, is that growth can actually hide a problem for a while, and even more sales can cover it up until some point it really doesn't anymore. And then you got to come to face the reality.
And when, so if a business owner kind of looks successful online or on paper, but they are struggling privately, what's a first warning sign that you see?
Another good question. And I think the first place I would look is not revenue. It's really focused on cash inflows and outflows. Three early warning signs that show up almost immediately are cash lag. And this is when revenue is growing, but the cash balances in the bank accounts are flat or even declining. That tells me money is getting stuck somewhere, usually receivables or inventory or some level of inefficient operations. The other thing I see is margin compression, where sales are up, but gross profit percentage is shrinking. That's often due to like discounting, maybe rising cost or trying to underprice to stay competitive. And then there's another one that pops up, which is owner avoidance. And this is where the owner isn't even looking at the numbers regularly. That's usually because that's usually a signal that the financial system isn't giving them enough clarity. And I once had a client even that, you know, insisted on, you know, learning like HTML. And this comes into another issue, which is like increased busyness. And, you know, they try to build their website to save cost, you know, just as a cost avoidance strategy. And at the end of the day, you know, she designed a pretty subpar website, wasted a lot of time because she really wasn't focused on the numbers. You know, she was really thinking that this was going to be helping her, but she ended up spending quite a bit of time with pretty unproductive activities.
And I know a lot of us do that, just speaking from personal experience. How do we stop doing that? Is it the systems? We need better systems in place? Or is it even an awareness that we're busying ourselves with things that aren't moving the needle? Like, how do we stop?
I loved what you said about systems, right? Because that gives us some regular cadence of what we do. I think ultimately, you know, we are going to be fighting fires as small business people. That's just kind of the nature of the beast. But if you have a system in place, what it helps you do is prioritize which fire to fight and how you want to really grow your business. I think way too often, you know, I think back in the day, you know, we've learned to work off some kind of task list or some sort of list, daily list that we follow. We start ticking off items that we accomplish. But if you really examine that list, how many of them are really important? Right? If you're spending a lot of time doing unimportant tasks, even though you're clicking things off, it's not really you're moving your business forward. It's not moving the needle at all. So I think you really need to think from, like you mentioned, a systematic standpoint.
Well, and also, don't you think there's a level maybe of fear underlying actually doing things that move the needle? Has that been your experience? Have you seen that?
100%. And I think, you know, like, I think in general, you know, like most of us don't like change a heck of a lot. We like it to stay consistent. We like to see something predictable. But I think over time, you start to see that you can't be that way. Things are going to happen and fear sets in. You have to face it. But if you have a system in place, all of a sudden, those decision-making processes become much, much easier. You actually have a method of dealing with the madness in some ways. As things come up, you know whether you need to delegate something or whether you need to address it very quickly. So I think that's really, really critical.
And in your own life, how have you dealt with fears that come up? It could be around business and in your personal life. What do you do personally when you kind of feel that fear of the unknown or fear of change? Is there something that your go-to?
You know, I think that's a really good question. And I think at least in my case, what I do is I'm more introspective. You know, I deal with a lot of my experience of the past and I bring that back in to see, you know, how that can apply to fixing a problem. I also am very careful about setting up a really good network of professionals and other folks I can turn to. You know, there's nothing like great advice, especially when it comes from a trusted third party. Usually they can, you know, shine a light on something that you're not really looking at very carefully. So I think that, you know, having all that type of input, being confident, you know, in your own approach, you know, I think there's nothing less to be said about having experience. I think experience solves a lot of issues because you just know how to deal with it, dealt with it in the past. So I think a combination, Janice, of all of those is what's been very helpful for me in terms of dealing with fear.
Ooh, great answer. The mentors, the taking action. I love it. So, if I'm a business owner listening right now, as many of those who listen to this show, they're professionals. What is the simplest truth that you want to say today, even if it stings a little, even if it's something I don't quite want to hear?
I think, one thing, and this may sound kind of surprising to some degree, but typically I find that most business owners don't really have a revenue problem. They have a decision visibility problem. And what I mean by this is most owners make financial decisions with incomplete or even inaccurate information. So, for example, they'll do pricing for their products without really having clear clarity on the cost, or they'll hire folks without really looking at what affects cash flow in the future. Or maybe they'll implement tax strategies without really doing some long-term tax planning. And then they wonder why these results seem unpredictable. I think the uncomfortable truth is that if you can't clearly explain where your money is going and why you're not in control, you're reacting. And actually, it's good news because this is actually a fixable issue. And but it does require some shifting from checking the numbers to actually managing them.
Ooh, clarity, clarity, clarity. That is so good. We are going to take a short break, but after the break, I'm going to get practical with Harsh. I really want to know, how do we stop bleeding out cash? We're going to have that conversation right after this. We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together. Welcome back to Spanish Janice. Hola todos. Thank you for being here. I am Janice Burt. I am back with Harsh Jadhav, CPA from My Profit Gurus. And we're talking about profit with zero judgment and maximum truth. We are not a judgy place here. We just want to encourage one another and work on those systems because I know those are important. And right now, I want to talk about the things that business owners can control every day, every week. Your cash flow rhythms, margin leaks, forecasting, and then how tax planning becomes a strategy and not like, oh my goodness, it is April surprise. So, welcome back, Harsh. This next question that I have for you is if someone says that sales are up, but they feel broke, what is the first thing that you would look into or say to that person?
Okay. I think the first thing I would investigate it is timing. Specifically where cash is getting delayed or trapped sometimes, because that statement usually means one or three things is happening. You're collecting cash lower than you're earning revenues, or your cost is rising faster than your pricing, or your business is reinvesting everything back into growth without even really realizing it. And a lot of owners don't realize this, but revenue is recorded when you earn it, and cash shows up when you actually collect it. The gap is actually where stress lives. So I'll go straight to looking at accounts receivable aging, the cash conversion cycle, and even operating expenses that are tied to growth.
Okay, so act like I'm a fifth grader and explain that last part. Where does stress grow between what and what? Explain that little section to me.
No worries. So what happens typically is when we look at our financial records, especially our profit and loss statement, or better known as the income statement, what happens is that revenue that we see on that line, that's based on a concept called accrual. So accrual means that you're recognizing this revenue when you actually earn it or you perform the services. But that does not tie into the fact that you're not getting that money right away. Sometimes what happens is people will pay you in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, even after you've completed the work. So the problem is that you've got revenue recorded on your books, but you don't have that actually money in your bank account yet for another 30 or 60, 90 days. So that difference in timing is what causes business owners lots of problems. They really don't understand the timing piece of it, and they end up expecting that money to be in their bank account when it isn't. So I think that's kind of a simple explanation around that.
Oh, that was perfect. See, my fifth grade mind totally understood
I got a sixth grade mind, so we're perfectly fine.
are you smarter than a fifth grader? You know, some of the questions I'm like, what? How do they know that? So, Harsh, what is one tax mistake? Because we are at the season to talk about this. What's one tax mistake that you often see small business owners make because maybe they're thinking like employees instead of like the owners that they are?
That's a really good question. I think, probably the most common mistake I see is they're waiting till April 15th and then asking, what can I write off? I mean, honestly, at that point, most of your options are already gone. I mean, owners should be thinking much a year, typically the year before, about how am I paying myself, like salary versus distribution. Or they may also be thinking about their entity structure to see if it's optimized. I mean, are they choosing an LLC or S Corp or some other different option? And are they leveraging, tax items like the retirement plans, depreciation, or timing strategies? It's interesting to me because several founders that we work with have a long history of working actually as employees before becoming founders. So with their employee mindset, they think that taxes are something you file rather than something you design. They get used to paying the $70,000 or $80,000 tax bill every year. When we show them legitimate tax strategies to reduce their tax bill to close to zero every year, as a business owner, they're completely surprised and realize the importance of true tax and business planning.
Ooh, we got to talk offline. I like that. That is so good about designing it because nobody, well, I can't say nobody, but nobody that I know thinks of, I got to design my tax plan. It's more reactive and more stressful. So what are some of the things that people can put into place to make this season, this tax season, less stressful? What's like one or two things they can do?
I can't stress enough about documentation. That is, I used to be a former IRS agent. So, from that perspective, I've been on the other side. So, I've seen how you can have a really good business, but if you don't document your deductions, document your strategy, document the way your business runs, it can cause a whole lot of problems in terms of trying to substantiate it in terms of an audit. Now, I'll say beyond the tax side of it, it's just good business practice. What happens if, for some example, you're ill or you lose a key worker? By not having documented processes, you run into a lot of problems. Now, tax-wise, quite honestly, I see a lot of folks who are not aggressive enough. They're happy paying a larger tax bill because they just want to avoid the scrutiny of an IRS audit. But in reality, they're actually entitled to those deductions. And if you don't claim them, the IRS is not going to gift them to you. So you're really in the long term, you're losing the opportunity to take good deductions that you're entitled to by not really, being aggressive and documenting correctly. So I think those are probably the key things I'm seeing, Janice.
That's so good because I don't know if you've ever watched Judge Judy, but she says that the person with the most documentation, the paper trail, wins usually. So
I'm a big fan
yes.
of Judge Judy, by the way, so I 100% agree.
Yes, she is smart woman. And so keeping, yeah, having all that documentation and the paperwork and then having someone like yourself who knows the strategies, how to save money, just things that if you're not studying it and you're not in the know, you'll just pass it by. And like you said, pay higher taxes. So that's really good. If I want to forecast something without becoming an accountant, What are the three numbers I should track weekly to stay out of panic mode?
Another good question. I'll tell you, like for me, it always boils down to cash. I think cash flow is absolutely critical. So the first number I'm always looking at is my cash balance in my bank account. So it's like, how much do I have? And how many weeks is that income that or the cash that I have in my bank account going to actually last? And we call that the burn rate. And then we have our weekly inflows and outflows that we're predicting over the next maybe 3 months. We want to be able to track that so we can look for unexpected potential payments that we need to make. Let's say, for example, we have a balloon payment due on a loan. That's something you probably signed many, many years ago. But if you're not watching out for that, all of a sudden that comes due, reduces your negotiating power. So why not be able to really project that out and forecast something like that? And then the other thing too is committed obligations, more like fixed expenses. We have a pretty good idea around payroll, rent, debt, but we need to actually lock those in and make sure that's part of the things that we're looking at on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. So we know that we have to have enough revenue or some sources of cash to pay those in the coming months. We just don't want to avoid surprises as much as possible.
Yes, surprises in this realm are never, never good things. It's not like surprise trip to Napa or something. So last question before we take another break. What is a smart profit protection move that a business can implement within 30 days that can really change the next, let's say, 12 months, the next year?
I am all about simplicity. I don't like complexity because it's really, really hard to implement that. So I think a simple profit allocation system works well. What I've seen what some of my most successful clients do is every dollar they earn is allocated into a separate bucket. And you can equate a bucket to a bank account. So if they have operating expenses, they have a bank account that supports operating expenses. They have a separate account that looks at owner's pay. So that gets deposited there. Also, they have a different account for taxes and even a separate account for profit. I think most businesses run everything through one account. So it's really hard to differentiate, you know, how much of that needs to be allocated for another important piece like the tax piece. So I think separating cash as it comes in, even if it's small percentages, you force some discipline into your system. And it does two things. You know, it really exposes whether your cost structure is sustainable, and it ensures that you're actually keeping a portion of what you earn. I can't tell you how many times I hear about, you know, successful entrepreneurs not taking their own profit, not even taking information or I should say money back because they feel they don't have enough to run the business.
Such great advice. Now, if this conversation is hitting home for you, you can watch Spanish Janice on the Now Media app on demand. And then also just send this episode to a friend who is making money but still feels stressed. And we will be right back with Harsh.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back to Spanish Janice. Now, let us talk about something that not a lot of people talk about, maybe even think about. But when you talk about scaling to get rich, right, and make a ton of money, which is great, but it can also make you exhausted and living a life that you don't want to be living, even though you have a lot of money. So we want to really focus on that version where we can grow and have money, but also experience peace and happiness and fulfillment. So Harsh, what is your take on these two sides of, you know, scaling our businesses, which is what everybody talks about, right? They talk about success is scaling your business and having a ton of money. But I don't know about you. I've also seen where people have done this
and they're very successful as far as money, but they are miserable. So how in your own life do you navigate this? And then if you have clients that struggle with this, what's some advice? What are some things, words of encouragement that you tell them?
I think, yeah, when it comes to scaling, you know, you brought up a really good point earlier that it also involves change. So you need to really be able to, you know, change the way you operate. I mean, as you're growing, there's growing pains, just like when you were a child, you know, things you need to do. I will say probably the biggest factor nowadays is using AI as much as you can in all the right areas. I am seeing that those folks that are able to optimize AI in the best way, they're able to scale much, much faster. So, you know, I think, you know, back in the day, instead, we were folks that focused on tools, right? So, of course, like ChatGPT, we use it one time. But now what I'm seeing is when you're talking about scaling, like let's say in terms of accounting, AI automatically actually categorizes those transactions from bank feeds and flags anomalies, prepares some draft close statements, you know, for your review. In service businesses, you know, AI analyzes job costs. It starts to price in real time, telling you which jobs are actually profitable. And even in sales, you know, AI starts to draft your proposals, follows up on, you know, based on some prior deals, and, you know, starts to create some of that synergy that you need to grow your business. That's what I think is going to be the next generation of scaling, is being able to use AI in the most effective manner. So it's not really a focus on tools, but it's a focus on how it actually can help your business and focusing more on the right tools to make it work for you.
And what is your take on this influx of AI lately? Like, do you have a positive view of it, a negative view? Are you kind of like, some of it's good, some of it cannot be so good? What do you think personally about AI?
I think it's a combination of both. You know, I do think it's a combination of both. And I think, you know, like some of the issues I see with AI, for example, is that when it comes to the inputs into an AI LLM, you know, if your books, for example, are really messy and your data isn't structured, AI is just going to give you a bad answer faster. I've seen businesses try to like AI-fy their financial reporting when they haven't even reconciled their books for months. And then the other thing I see is like in terms of like no ownership, right? Someone has to own the output. You know, if AI generates a forecast, who's actually validating it? And we call that a human in the loop. And without that, people are blindly trusting the output. And third, you know, there's no real process design around it. I mean, this is a big one, because if your workflow is broken, like poor approvals, no standardization, you know, unclear key performance indicators, and you drop AI on top of it, you're not really just fixing the problem, you're actually scaling the inefficiency of it. So I think those are some of the things I would look at.
Ooh, scaling the inefficiencies of it. So how do we know who or what to listen to? With AI, do you fully trust the information that it's giving you?
I'll talk about it from like, let's say a tax perspective, right? So I would not really rely on AI to provide me a really important tax information type of thing, because I don't think that, you know, all the information is always the most current or it's the most relevant to your specific tax situation. I think in situations like that, whether it's tax or legal, I think you may use AI as maybe your first step to understanding the concept, but you're better off talking to a professional with years of experience to really get a good answer. Now, for basic AI queries, for marketing, for setting up lead gen, things like that, I think AI does a fabulous job. But I think we're always conscious about the fact that, you know, we don't want to share customer data, you know, due to some of the privacy regulations, things like that. I think when from a compliance perspective, that's another level that we need to be aware of.
So is AI something that you're not nervous about in your own field and your own industry? Or is it something that you think, you know, in the future, it could be a little competition with AI? I know for different industries, it's a little bit different, but what is your feeling with your particular industry on that?
That is such an excellent question. And I will tell you, like, specific to the work I do, and let's just say, let's talk about, you know, tax return preparation, for example. That is becoming pretty automated. You're seeing lots of tools out there offered by different companies where they basically say you can file a simple tax return for free sometimes. So it's really bringing the cost factor down for, you know, how much, you know, tax professionals could even charge for tax returns. So I am seeing that part of it happening where it comes to the actual compliance piece of it, the tax preparation piece of it. Yeah, that is definitely getting affected by AI. But if you look at the other side of it, when it comes to maybe tax planning, that's a lot deeper. And I don't think that AI is at that point where it can provide you that level of analysis that's very specific and unique to your circumstance, because it really relies on the information you're feeding it. But your whole portfolio is a lot bigger than what you're feeding into a query. So I think that, you know, in terms of planning, it's very critical to work with a solid tax professional.
And so if someone's company, let's say, is adding AI tools and automations, what financial or compliance blind spots might show up for them?
So I think I see like probably three major blind spots. First is data governance risk. This is when you have like sensitive financial or customer data that's flowing through the tools without really clear policies on storage or access retention. The other thing I see is output reliability risk. And this is when decisions are made on AI generated insights that haven't been validated, especially like financial forecasting or like we talked about tax. And the other thing I see is cost creep, you know, disguised as innovation. You know, I think just similar to other things we do in our life, you know, you have multiple tools that get layered in, each with subscriptions, but no one's really tracking the ROI redundancy of these AI tools. So I think, you know, wearing my compliance lens, I think the biggest issue once again comes back to documentation. And are you able to actually explain how AI is really being used in your office?
How AI is being used in your office? And do you think in most industries, there is a level of, it's a good idea to use AI for certain things and that those should be strategic and that everybody, like systems that people use for particular industries, or what's your view on that?
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think it does depend on the industry and, you know, what is like standard usage, what are the typical workflows that maybe AI makes a lot of sense for. I mean, even today, and the tools have advanced significantly over the last couple of years for sure, and they're getting much, much better. But it is not the end all that solves everything that's going on in your business. It's a great helper. It's a great use. And many use cases are evolving where it's making it a better tool, definitely replacing, you know, humans to some degree. But I think what I'm finding business owners really taking advantage of is they're being very selective in the tool set that they choose when it comes to AI implementations. Because not only is it the cost of the tool, but it's about learning the tool good enough where you can actually implement it in your business. I mean, it's easy to do maybe a ChatGPT query, but how do you actually use ChatGPT where it's going to be beneficial to your business, where it's actually solving problems, reducing costs, you know, helping you, you know, grow your business to where it needs to be? That's the type of thinking I think needs to happen. And my thought is that it's better to choose fewer AI solutions, but make sure they're implemented well and fully.
That is so good. Fewer, less is more when you know how to use them and implement them fully. So well said. So we're going to go on to our very last segment. In this final segment, I want to wrap it all up and bring it back to wellness and self-care and leadership, like personal leadership of ourselves. because money stress can really hold us back. It's nervous system stress that we want to be able to let go of. So stay with us and we will explore all the possible ways to do that.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
We are back, my friends, this last segment of Spanish Janice with the amazing guest, Harsh Javad, CPA from My Profit Gurus. And we are going to close with my favorite part, building a business that supports my life, my health, my wellness, a lot of self-care and balance of business and personal life, health and wellness. So let us talk about what you do, Harsh, in your own life when it comes to health and wellness and coming back to yourself, because I know you're a businessman, and so you're business focused, you're solving people's problems. But what do you do for your own self-care?
I think, you know, it's interesting, you know, I think they actually, the both those roles are actually pretty combined. If you look at your business side and you look at your personal, you know, maintenance, I think they are really have good synergy. And I don't think you can really do one without the other very effectively. I think for me, you know, it's about balance. You know, I love my job. I love what I do. But at the same time, you know, self-care is so important. You know, whether it's, you know, just daily exercise or, you know, eating well or, you know, just having, you know, doing things outside of work, right? You know, whether you're just going on travel or you're going to go see some fun things. I think one thing I do for sure every day is every morning I'll get up and I will just do some reflection of what all the great things that have happened in my life. And I've been very blessed and I've been very lucky. And I remind myself that, you know, these are things that are important to me. And this is all the reason I need to keep continuing to grow and to be able to give back. I think the other thing I do at the end of the day is always reflect on what has actually happened. I always will come up with a list of not just business things I need to solve, but actually personal things, you know, whether it's to get better at something, you know, better communication, you know, being able to find more opportunities to give back. You know, I'm really big into charities. I love to be able to, you know, provide that output, you know, and I served on a charity board for a while, and it was one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had. So I'm always looking for those type of things. And to me, probably more than revenue or anything like that, it's, you know, that ability to give back, to get that karma back from all those folks that you're able to help. I think that drives me. That's really my driver for myself. And it makes me a better business person and maybe even a better human.
Oh, absolutely a better human, I would say. And I love what you said about, it's like a bookend. So you're starting your day with the reflection and gratitude, and you're ending the day with the same. And I think that's so brilliant to bookend your day in that sort of a way. And is this something you mentioned lists? Is this something like you journal? Do you journal every evening or just every once in a while? Is that in your practice to journal?
You know, I wish it was. You know, I don't journal in that way. You know, I think unfortunately I'm more like an accountant that I'll probably put lists together. But I think, you know, for me, Janice, it's more about a reminder, right? Just more of a reminder, you know, to know that I have this ultimate vision of what I need to try to do. And every day I have to remind myself that I'm going in the right direction. I mean, it's very easy, and I fall prey to it all the time with the shiny object syndrome. And I just need to find a way to focus on what's really most important. Because I think when we talk about assets and we talk about accounting, I think one of the most underestimated assets of all is time, right? We have a certain amount of time. So how do you like optimize that time to put it for the best use where you can help the most people?
So good. What is one boundary, in your opinion, a boundary or or an activity, something that you do that protects your profit and your mental health. It's something that someone can implement immediately to protect each of those.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, like the time off, you know, like we talked about the balance that you need to have probably in your life. And for me, even like during stressful times, like tax season, we know where you're constantly on the move, constantly working. If you don't take that time, you know, just to, you know, kind of stop and smell the roses a little bit, and you walk away from the business, and maybe just to, even if you take a nice walk, for me, it's like I take an hour walk every day. Whether if I can't, for some reason, do it in the afternoon, which is my right after lunch is when I typically do it, I'll go in the evening. But that time, you know, where I have an hour away from everything, it allows me to sort of think and, you know, just ensure that my, you know, my personal balance is in check. It's really easy to get caught up with all the activity. You got to make that phone call. Oh, tax returns due, all those things. But that gives me a time to ground myself and just figure out, am I doing the right thing? And am I working, you know, the most efficient manner? So that hour a day of just personal time is a non-negotiable for me. And I'll always schedule that in.
So you, every day you take an hour out of your day to go walk and kind of reflect and think, is that what you do?
That's exactly what I do. That's correct.
Woo! That is, I think if each of us took an hour out of our day to, because you're doing several things at once in doing that with the movement that's so good, just physically, mentally, in moving. Also, if you're outside, maybe some vitamin D, which is known to be great for our mental health, and the reflection part, being centered. I mean, we would all be different human beings, I truly believe, if we took an hour out of our day and our busy schedules to go on a walk and reflect in that way. Do you always go alone, or do you go with people sometimes?
I think, you know, I actually prefer to go alone, to be honest, because it kind of gives me some time to kind of think about things. And, you know, every once in a while, if I, you know, I'm like bored or have something fun to talk about, I may bring somebody along. But I think typically that alone time actually works good for me. So, and I think, you know, beyond anything, you know, I think we live stressful lives. So I think just that hour away where you can just unwind and, you know, just detach yourself from everything, I think that really works well for me. And I think one trick too is I don't bring my cell phone with me when I go for that walk. So I have like no disruptions. I'm just really focused on the walk and all the beautiful scenery out there.
That's really good. No social media, no phone calls, true disconnection. Because I find that even having it in your back pocket or my purse or something, there's still a little bit of a draw, or it's just still there. Whereas if you just leave it in your car, leave it at home and go out for that walk, I could see that making a huge difference. If you could give us business owners one rule for 2026, to stay resilient, to keep bouncing back, coming back better than ever financially and emotionally, what would that rule be?
I think, you know, the one thing is you want to build your business to be adaptable and resilient, but it doesn't have to be perfect. I think sometimes we get so caught up with trying to be perfect, whether it's sending out the perfect email or building the perfect business model. It's not about that, because your business is going to be changing all the time. I think, you know, we are seeing, you know, with the economy, for example, markets will shift, costs will change, revenue will fluctuate. And our goal is the businesses that stay stable are the ones that are actually maintaining, you know, really strong cash reserves in case an emergency pops up. They keep a pretty flexible cost structure, and they make decisions, you know, based on current data, not so much intuition and assumptions. I think resilience isn't about avoiding pressure, but it's about being prepared for it.
Again, preparation and documentation, clarity. I'm getting so much out of this conversation. What is the next right move challenge that you want to leave with our audience? So one action that they could take, let's say, in the next month that will propel them or their business forward? What would that be?
Okay. So I would say open up your financial statements, you know, whether it's your income statement or your balance sheet, and then answer one question honestly. Where's my money actually going, and does it align with how I want it to grow? Not what you think, not what you hope, but what the numbers actually show. Then take one of these actions. Cut one unnecessary expense. Adjust maybe one pricing decision. And then set one rule around cash. You don't need a full transformation in 24 hours. You just need to make one small move at a time.
Oh my goodness. Well, and just by you saying that, I just thought of the subscriptions and memberships that I have that I've signed up for, that if I don't look at my statements or QuickBooks or whatever, I just forget that I signed up for them. You know, different apps, membership fees, things like that. So I think that's a great one, is just to kind of look through all of whatever you're paying for with those little apps and memberships and go, am I using this? Do I really need this? You know, there's things even like if you're watching YouTube, you can get YouTube Premium and you're paying however much every month to watch YouTube with no ads, for instance, just an example. But just looking at those things and going, is that really important to me? Is that something that I need to keep on, or is it something that I could get rid of? Do you see that a lot when dealing with people that they have these expenses that they just don't even remember that they signed up for?
We even have a term for it. You know, we call it subscription creep. And it's interesting. You brought up such a great point, is that how many of us, you know, actually even subscribe? We subscribe to these 30-day free trials, right? Which then convert into like a paid subscription because we didn't cancel them on time. It may be even just like $15 a month, so it barely hits the bottom line, and it almost feels easier to ignore it. But you'd be surprised, just like you said, you know, when you add up all these subscriptions together, it can actually affect your bottom line. And I think, you know, even more so, you know, when you have to be very careful about those annual subscriptions. So these are usually large dollar amounts you spend for your software, for example. You pay them once a year, but they're on an auto renewal process. So if you don't cancel them, next year you're hit with a big bill. So I think those are another risky one to think about.
Great, great points. And Harsh, I have had so much fun. I looked at CPA and I thought, are we going to have fun on this call? You know what? I have had so much fun talking to you, and I have inspiration. I have some new information. So I'm actually going to go home and implement some of the things that you've talked about today. So I just want to thank you so much for joining me, and to everyone watching, you don't necessarily need more hustle. Maybe you need better clarity. Maybe you need more documentation. Listen to Harsh. He's the professional. But also, we need to care for ourselves in the hustle and bustle of life. So go out and take that walk. Bookmark your day with reflection, maybe a little meditation, just silence, and join me on another episode of Spanish Janice in the future. Harsh, I just want to thank you for being an amazing guest, sending all my love out to you all. We'll see you next time.